Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 11, Invasion of the Spider Slayers. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my cohort, Chris Slate.
Hello!
And together we are Wild Stallion. That's not true. We're not Wild Stallion. We're here to talk about Nintendo, as per usual. And our big topic this week is going to be the future of Nintendo's big franchises. We're going to talk about what we want to see out of the next Mario, what we want to see out of the next Metroid, the next Donkey Kong, and maybe some other stuff as well. But first, the news! And our first news topic is one that we always seem to be coming back to these days, and that is Amiibo. Yes, right after we recorded last week's episode, a whole flood of Amiibo information came out. We found out more about that Rob, Mr. Game & Watch, and Duck Hunt 3-pack, which ended up being an exclusive to GameStop, and it went on sale, or for pre-order, rather, on Saturday.
Yeah. And that seemed like the scariest thing in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. You're talking about exclusive. You're talking about three retro characters,
three exclusives.
Yeah, that I wanted the most, all in one box.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, especially that Rob.
I personally wasn't going to be able to get there to line up ridiculously early. I ended up getting there maybe 40 minutes early, which was earlier than I thought I could make it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think you had a similar experience. But when I got there, 40 minutes early,
I got there an hour early myself.
I was like eighth in line, and my particular GameStop had 27. It was posted up front. Clearly, they had 27 pre-orders to go. And even by the time they let us all in to do pre-orders, they still hadn't come close to filling 27. So I was worrying for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that ended up being very fortunate for you, but it really turned out to be that way pretty much for everybody. I mean, the one I was lined up at compared to the other ones I've heard about, there was a pretty decent-sized line. There were about 40 people in line when the store opened up, and they had 63 to sell in total. But, I don't know of any stores that, sold out. It really didn't seem like you really needed to get in line to do this. You could have walked in later in the day or at the end of the day and still done it. And, in fact, as we're recording this, they are still available for purchase online at the GameStop website.
Did this prove then that we've finally reached the point where Nintendo has adequately addressed the problem of Amiibo shortages?
It might be. I mean, it feels kind of like that bubble, might have burst and, the worst is over. But you never know with Amiibo.
I know it's so strange because they even promoted this ahead of time. I mean, everybody knew about it. That's why I thought it was going to be a nightmare. I mean,
yeah, they sent out an email to everybody the day before saying, hey, we've got this thing going on. Come in. We are open up an hour early. Get your Amiibo. They didn't say it was an exclusive, which might have curbed the enthusiasm a little bit, but still, it's Amiibo, and you know how quick they tend to go.
Mm-hmm. I did hear that there was some confusion, at least at one of the stores in my area, where and this had been part of the rumors that had been getting out beforehand that you might be required to be a pro member at GameStop in order
The day before, I called up a couple of stores, and one of them started telling me that you do need to be a pro member, and he's like, oh, wait. Wait, someone's yelling in my ear. Oh, nope, no you don't. Never mind all that stuff I just said. So yeah, there was definitely some mixed information about that.
Yeah, and we heard at the store we were at, the guy who ran that GameStop said that that one of the ones at a local mall had been telling people that all week, that they had to be pro members to get in line early. Mm. And then they found out really late that that wasn't the case, but they'd already been telling people that all week. So by the time we were all in line, he told us that at the same time there were only two people in line at that other location.
That's kind of embarrassing.
But that can't explain all of the, even if there was some confusion at certain stores by that, can't explain all of it. They must have finally, and well, like you were saying, just look at the allocations each store was getting. Some of them were ridiculously high numbers.
Yeah, and yours was only 27, but mine, the one closest to me was 75. The one I was at was 62. I heard from somebody else that was getting 125.
Wow. And compare that to when Shulk was a pre-order, or rather an exclusive at GameStop.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are like with Shulk. I mean, I do remember him being up for pre-order for a long, long time. But compare it to just the non-exclusives, like Lucina, each store maybe gets four if they're lucky. So yeah, I mean, we're talking, 20 or 30 times the number of a common like Robin and Lucina.
It's funny, I almost feel like Nintendo did something wrong
because
they did it right. I'm like,
how weird is this? Why is this thing still available? It's been up for more than 24 hours. How bizarre.
Wow, they really blew it. They made more than they needed to just because it was around longer than 24 hours.
Yeah, that's how it was, you know, a few months ago with waves one and two and even three.
And, of course, this is just pre-orders, but it's like we've been saying all along, Nintendo needs to get to the point where you don't have to be somebody who's in the know, you know, like waiting by the computer or mm-hmm. waiting in mm-hmm. line somewhere to get a pre-order in. They needed to get to the point where you could just walk into a store at least for a week or two and buy them. Mm-hmm. And it looks like that's going to be the case with this three-pack.
Yeah, so it seems. I mean, I don't like the fact that you know, we still ended up having to go out and stand outside a GameStop and wait in line. At least that's how we felt. We felt that we were forced to do that, but we didn't really need to. So things are improving, but, you know, we do, you know, continue on with these horrible mental scars of the past where
that's
we
right.
feel that we have to line up. Like, there was one guy at the store I was at. You know, he was there. He was all, you know, snuggled up in a blanket. He's like, yeah, I've been here ever since I got off work at 2 a.m.
God. I know, and you get mad, but it's like, well, even if Nintendo had come out and said, you know what, we made a lot of these, so don't line up, none of us would have trusted that.
I know.
We all
would have
lined up. And the next time, I'm still going to line up. Mm-hmm. And for the foreseeable future, I can't imagine myself not at least trying to get there a few minutes early because, you know, the one time you don't,
mm-hmm.
and it's also still hard to imagine, for example, that, you know, like when the next, you know, rare character, like a Fire Emblem character or something comes out,
mm-hmm.
that you'd be able to just pick those up because you've never been able to. So I don't know what's going on right now, but hopefully this is a good start to a new pattern from Nintendo of putting out enough product to meet at least the initial demand.
Yeah, totally.
And maybe we'll start to get comfortable enough we can enjoy the Amiibo without having all these weird PTSD scars from past experiences.
Well, let me tell you, you're going to get to find out in about a month because these ones that we've been talking about are coming out on September 25th. But before that, on September 11th, the same day that Mario Maker comes out, there are going to be five new Smash Amiibo coming out at the same time, along with the retro Pixel Mario. And that's going to be the remainder of Wave 5. You know, technically, Palutena and Dark Pit were part of Wave 5, and the remainder is Olimar, Ganondorf, Bowser Jr., Dr. Mario, and Zero Suit Samus. And all of those are supposed to be out on September 11th. So far, no pre-orders that we're aware of. But you know, if it goes like usual, they'll be announced tomorrow, right before this podcast goes live.
That's a lot of stuff for my wallet to take on one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go, you know, with Nintendo this year, we've had long, long, long droughts without anything. In fact, if we didn't have Amiibo, and this is probably why we talk about Amiibo as much as we have, then there's only been like a couple of games so far this year for Nintendo.
Yeah. This past quarter, the last 3 or 4 months have been really, really dry.
So,
regardless.
So I guess in a way I've been saving up my money, but that's going to be a tough one to explain to the wife when I drop a couple $100 on games and toys on one day?
Well, I actually just got my hands on one of these Amiibo. You know, as we mentioned, you know, I've got all these scars from Wave 4, and so I went and I imported all of Wave 5, and I finally got my hands on the last one, and that is Captain Olimar with the Pikmin. And wow, I mean, it's another really, really good one. I actually feel like I need to go back and you know, change my impressions of some of the ones I saw earlier. Because, you know, at first I was really impressed with Ganondorf and Zero Suit Samus. Looking at them compared to some of the other ones, I'm kind of thinking their paint apps are a little bit sloppy. You know, really great sculpts. But there is, you know, a little bit of weirdness going on in some respects. Like, you know, Samus's gun is blue instead of gray like it's supposed to be. But that doesn't change the fact that Olimar is really fantastic. And I feel like Amiibo have been broken into sort of two categories so far. There's the very cartoony, colorful characters that aren't really detailed. And there's the more humanoid, more realistic characters that tend to have lots and lots of detail, like the Fire Emblem folks and Palutena. But Olimar is sort of a combination of both. He's, you know, very cartoony with very bold, bright colors. But he's also just got, you know, some crazy level of detail going on. And, you know, I can't even, you know, tell what I'm looking at here. There's these little emblems on his outfit. I think, you know, we're going to need a microscope to check it out and see what's going on. The other thing that's really cool about him is that he is flanked by the three Pikmin. In a lot of the images, you can't really tell there's a yellow Pikmin sort of behind him. But he's got a red, yellow, and blue Pikmin all in different stages of growth, one with just a bulb, one with a leaf, one with a flower. And, you know, between the three Pikmin and Olimar, it's like this tiny, really fantastic little diorama. It's just really, really neat and, you know, fun to have.
Yeah, it adds a lot of extra character, and we were talking about this before. All of the Smash Amiibo obviously share the same Smash Emblem base, which makes sense and is as it should be. But you get used to seeing it, and it's a little less special over time. When you see these Pikmin arranged around Olimar, it really adds a little something special to the base and just to how the overall thing comes across. Like you said, almost like a little diorama.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm particularly impressed with how, you know, his head is inside of the big kind of bubble helmet,
mm-hmm.
And which is clear and you can see through it. So it's like these, it's hard to explain, but two layers of surface kind of going on there that really just look great. I mean, the whole thing is like you said, is a really great example of how far they've come in lots of other little areas, how they've ramped up the detail, how great they've always done at the shapes of the more cartoony characters,
mm-hmm.
and in this case, how they've added something really special extra to just the base and the overall appearance of the amiibo.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like they've been, you know, very, very good since the beginning, you know, with very few exceptions. But this one just, you know, it really knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, they just keep getting better.
Yeah, that was not the only amiibo I picked up. I've also been, you know, very interested in the non-Smash amiibo, and the curiosity finally got the better of me, and I picked up a blue Yarn Yoshi from Yoshi's Woolly World. And, of course, it is something that's, you know, totally different. Again, it looks very, very nice. It's adorable.
It's looking at it in your hand right now, it's smaller than I would have thought. Because you get used to seeing it in the pictures, and they're always zoomed in, you know, close up.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense when you see it in person. It's about the size of a regular amiibo, and you pointed out to me maybe even a little larger than most.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually bigger than Olimar here.
Yeah.
By quite a bit.
But and also, you wouldn't want it to be too big because you have to set it onto your new 3DS or the mm-hmm. or the gamepad. But for me, I'm used to seeing it and thinking of it as more of a plush toy, thinking mm-hmm. of it like a bigger teddy bear or something. So it was extra cute to see its kind of diminutive size here.
Yeah, I've heard from some other people that thought the same thing, thought it was smaller than they were expecting. But for me, it seems like it's a good size, it's a nice size. Mine is a little bit lopsided, so he sits just a little bit awkwardly. But, you know, it's still, you know, very, very cute. I love the purple shoes in particular.
That little red shell on his back.
You know, there are no actual stands on these, unlike all the other amiibo, but he does have, you know, a sort of hard spot on his keister where I guess that's where the tech is embedded.
Almost like a little patch.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. But, yeah, it's pretty darn nifty. You know, I am intending to get the green one at the very least, and then I'll be like, well, might as well get the pink one as well.
So you know, you'll get the pink one. Come on.
Too hard to get my mitts on. But, yeah, it's a fun little toy. I guess a little firmer than I was kind of expecting. It's not quite as, you know, soft as I thought it might be.
What they don't tell you is that on the inside of each Yarn Yoshi amiibo is a original like a Wii Fit trainer or a Fire Emblem amiibo that they intentionally kept from the public.
That must be it. That would explain a lot. So obviously amiibo have been a big part of Smash Brothers, you know, from Mr. Sakurai. And he was also in the news recently, you were telling me, right?
Yeah, I guess I saw a translation or some clips from a translation of his weekly column in Famitsu.
No, I don't even think I knew he was doing that.
Yeah. Actually, now that I say that, I'm not entirely sure he does it every week. But he has a regular recurring column in Famitsu, a Japanese top gaming magazine for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely familiar with that.
Yep. And he had a really interesting subject this week, I thought, that really, you know, got my mind working. He said, you know, obviously his games, especially the Smash Brothers series, are just packed with content. Lots of optional modes, lots of things you don't necessarily need, you know, for the core functionality of the game to work, but just extra bits that he puts in there just for fun. He took exception to the fact, and I'm not sure if this was in a direct response to something someone said recently about one of his games or if he was perhaps speaking up about a comment made about someone else's title, but the general idea that that people say, well, I wish that this mode wasn't in the game, or, you mm-hmm. know, they really should have gotten rid of this or that. And also the fact that point of view is really evident in reviewers' scores,
mm-hmm.
that when reviewing something, People tend to start out with the idea that, okay, we're starting with a score of 100, and every time we encounter something bad, we're going to maybe mentally detract some points for that. And to some degree, that kind of thought process ends up resulting in the final score. His point of view was like, look, you know, if you don't like this mode or whatever, it wasn't a necessary mode anyway. There's already a lot of content in here. Then don't begrudge anyone else who might enjoy that mode. You know, everybody likes something different. That's why he wants to offer up a wide variety of things. And everybody can just enjoy what they like and ignore what they don't like with us. I think I'm paraphrasing him fairly accurately. That was his point. And it started me thinking, because this is the kind of thing I thought about a lot when we used to do reviews for Nintendo Power and other magazines. You know, does something need to be – is a review score more the reflection of something that is you know, how perfect it is, how close to perfection it is? Or is it just more a reflection of its overall kind of general value in perhaps more vague terms? So what do you think about that? What do you think about that argument he's making that basically, look, stop bashing modes that you don't like in my games. You don't need them. I just put them in basically out of the extra love that I have for this franchise. And there are people that like them. So just enjoy what you like and, you know, get off my back.
I would tend not to agree with him. I mean, all that stuff varies. You know, it depends on, you know, what the feature is and stuff like that. But you can't, you know, put a feature in and have it be bad and think that's not going to detract from the overall product. I mean, take, you know, Smash Brothers on Wii. You know, the online, you know, should have been a major component of that, but ended up being, you know, really lousy. And that, you know, dragged it down a little bit. I mean, sometimes, you know, if it's just a small bonus thing, then, you know, if it's a mini game or something like that, you know, say the, you know, the Street Pass mode in Smash Brothers for 3DS, you know, that's not amazing or anything, but it's such a small part of the game. I don't think anyone's going to knock down the score because, oh, he didn't really do something fantastic with Street Pass here. So I think it all depends on, you know, how much of the package that this, you know, particular component that someone doesn't like really is.
Yeah, I found his comments really interesting, and this is why it really made my brain work, is that I definitely see both sides. And I think it maybe in the end you kind of go with your gut, and it's on a case-by-case basis. Because
I kind of think it probably is.
Because there are plenty of things in Smash Brothers, using that game as our continued example, in both the 3DS and Wii U versions, there are plenty of modes or options that I don't take advantage of and that I don't find particularly engaging. But is there anything in there that I would rather had not been in the game that I wouldn't play even to a small extent? You know, no, I'm kind of happy to have as much content as he wants to put in there. There are levels, for example, you know, there's the Mega Man level that has the Yellow Devil.
Oh, yeah, that guy's such a jerk.
I hate the Yellow Devil. I hate that I can't, you know, turn him off and just enjoy the aesthetics of the Mega Man level by themselves. Even though I can play the, you know, the what is it, the Omega mode, that is just more of a Final Destination style. But would I want that level erased from the game? No. At the end of the day, I'll kind of take whatever content I can get, and I'll enjoy it in various, you know, varying degrees. And it's interesting that you brought up Brawl as an example, because I reviewed that game and for Nintendo Power, and back in the day, I actually gave that game a 10.
Now, but that was before you had had a chance to play online mode.
Yeah, we hadn't had a chance to play online mode.
I mean, not in a real-life situation anyway.
And but here's the thing. When I scored it, and this was back in the day, we were just starting to get to the point where online was kind of expected in games, I think.
At least on Nintendo, I mean.
On Nintendo, it was probably even less expected because they didn't do it. So I was really judging Brawl as just a standalone, you know, couch multiplayer game at that point. And I figured, well, if it's online, you know, we're not going to get the chance to play this in time for our review. But I'm sure it's fine as long as it's not, you know, broken. Now, of course, it did go on to be broken.
It ended up being broken.
So that is a problem. And that probably should have been reflected in the score. But at the same time, you know, if that mode hadn't been in there at all.
Shame on you for not warping to the future and finding out.
Exactly. If that mode hadn't been in the game at all, though, would I have scored it lower? Because at that point in time, I don't know that I would have thought online was a necessity for Smash.
I mean, if you're going to put in a significant mode, I think it does have to be done right.
Well, I think it needs to work. I think you can debate if, as long as it's solid and there are people that enjoy it and it becomes more of a matter of personal taste, then I don't see anything wrong with you know, put it in there, and the people that like it, and the people that don't can ignore it.
I mean, to use another example, I remember people complaining a lot about the multiplayer mode in Metroid Prime 2 because Yeah, that was something that really wasn't part of Metroid, but it was sort of like, you know, oh, this is a necessary part of all first-person shooters. It's got to be thrown in there. But a lot of people just, you know, didn't like it, didn't think it was done very well. And again, it feels like something that they touted as a major feature. But if you put it in there and it just isn't up to par with what you expect, then it is going to drag the score down. I think that's fair. You can't just say, oh, well, we'll just pretend it's not there and, you know, the game is, you know, just really good without it. I mean, Metroid Prime 2, I guess, had other issues as well. But, yeah, what I'm saying, I think, still stands.
I don't disagree. At the same time, I do think I've always had an issue with feeling like, Sakurai, I believe, put it in his column, more of a demerit system, that you start out with kind of a perfect score and every little knock against you gets it taken down. You know, I believe there are some games. I mean, certainly if you compare like a Zelda game or a Mario game generally to any other game on that platform or the average score of most games on any given Nintendo system, then I believe those games generally, when they're working great, they're operating like at a 12 or a 13, 14 on a scale of 1 to 10.
I don't think that makes any sense, but okay.
I just think there are some games that are so good and maybe even have so much content that they go above and beyond what we'd usually consider as a game that's actually, you know, pretty good. There are good games, there are great games, and there are masterpiece games, I guess is what I'm getting at. And I would say that, you know, even if you knocked a few elements of a game like, you know, Ocarina of Time, you know, it's certainly not a perfect game. Or if there were elements of, you know, Super Mario 3D World that you weren't entirely happy with. I feel like on the whole, the game has so much more to offer and is so much more fun than most other games that I feel like it maybe that just knocks it down to being more on more of a human level and less of a godlike status. But I don't know that necessarily.
Well, I think that's kind of where it comes into being on a case-by-case basis. I mean, in some cases, I think that's true. But, you know, in a lot of them, not so much.
Because obviously, not all 10s, 9s, and 8s are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
If the best Mario game, if your favorite Mario game is a 10, then, you know, there are other games out there that have 9s that people are probably comfortable having 9s. But I wouldn't look at some of those 9s and say, yeah, that's one point away from Mario perfection, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, there are some games where, you know, I really, really like them. Let's take you know, Super Mario Galaxy, for example. Yeah, that's a game that I would have given a 10 if I'd been the reviewer. You know, there are, you know, maybe a couple of things about it. Actually, let's take Mario Galaxy 2 instead. I probably would have given that a 10. You know, but I thought, you know, it didn't have like that cool story that the first game did. It didn't have you know, that interesting structure with the hub world that the first game did. And ultimately, I don't think that matters. You know, I think it's still, you know, worth giving a 10 to, even if it doesn't have these things. And I think when it comes down to that sort of thing, it's like, yes, this isn't perfect, but that doesn't matter. And if it's a feature that, you know, isn't really a major component, doesn't really factor in that much, you'd be like, you know what, it's not perfect, but it doesn't matter. I can still justify giving this game a 9 or a 9.5 or a 10 or whatever. Sometimes, though, I think, you know, they do factor in, and I'm not going to, you know, keep saying the same thing over and over again because I've sort of mentioned the same thing before, and that's where it will hurt the score.
Yeah, I think we kind of agree.
I think so.
I think it is more of a case-by-case basis, and a score ultimately should just reflect a game's overall kind of value and worth in the broader sense. And depending on the game and depending on the modes and depending on exactly what's wrong or right, you know, those factors can be measured up in different ways.
I mean, you take it to an extreme. You know, you could have, you know, a mediocre game with, you know, tons and tons of modes, and they could all be poopy. But just because it has tons of stuff in there, it's still poopy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the same side of the coin as something that is amazing. You know, if it's got a few poopy parts, that doesn't necessarily stop it from being amazing if mm-hmm. the amazing part is that good.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what else is kind of poopy?
What's that?
The official delay of Mighty No. 9 until next year.
Yeah, that seemed to come out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, there had been a bit of rumbling for a few weeks, and during the whole Red Ash campaign, it seemed like maybe there was a reason they were doing this campaign now instead of before, or rather instead of after the game came out, and they were kind of being very hush-hush during all Red Ash, like they didn't want to tell us something. And it turned out, yeah, that was true. There was a delay. And, you know, it's funny, we're just talking about, you know, these extra modes and things because allegedly the reason it's been delayed is because they wanted to make sure that the online, you know, I think it's an online co-op mode and an online versus mode. They want to make sure that those are, you know, totally working perfectly out of the box when the game launches. You know, they could have, you know, held off and said, oh, yeah, we won't include these initially, maybe, you know, added on as a patch or something like that. But no, instead they are saying just to hold off and make sure that those are totally good to go when the game launches. But it's a pretty pretty significant delay, I feel like. I mean, it's at least 4 months, I gather, because it's going to be, you know, sometime in early 2016, but they haven't even nailed down an exact date yet. So,
and from what they've said, isn't it pretty much feature complete, and it's really just bugs that they're trying to work out?
Because that
I mean, that does seem like a long time to just iron out some bugs, especially if you've already identified them.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, is that the game is pretty much ready to roll, except for ironing out these online bugs in these modes.
Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, I can only assume that, you know, since they're the ones that had to stand up in front of everyone and kind of, you know, lose face a little bit, that they really are working as fast as they can to get this stuff out. But, yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, between that and, you know, things I brought up before about, you know, the retail physical copy not being available to backers and the collector's edition not being available to backers, yeah, just this Kickstarter ended up going downhill quite a bit. But, like I've mentioned before, I really enjoyed playing it at E3, and I do think it's going to be worth it in the long run. But it's too bad that it's going to be coming in like almost a year late compared to what they promised. So that is a bit of a drag.
Yeah. But like you said, the final judgment will be based on how good the game is. And if it's a great game, you know, in a few years' time, we won't really care about the hiccups. But the pressure is that much greater on them now to deliver something really special. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Anything else going on in Nintendo news this week?
One last thing that I know about, DNA, the company that Nintendo is partnering with for its smartphone games, had a financial report, and apparently it was pretty dry, but they did make mention that they are, quote, currently making announcement plans with Nintendo for those first apps. And, you know, we'd heard Nintendo's announced, I believe, previously that the first of those apps was supposed to be ready before the end of the year, to come out before the end of the year.
Yes.
So it makes sense that they'd... you know, be making announcement plans now. So hopefully that means we hear something really soon, because I'll tell you, I'm dying to see what a Nintendo smartphone game looks like.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to finally see it unveiled.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't be too much longer to wait.
You know, hopefully it'll be fun, and hopefully it'll, you know, bring some quality to an increasingly kind of questionable, you know, space of gaming.
Indeed, you can say that.
Yeah.
More than once.
More than anything, though, I just want to see what it is so I can stop worrying about it. Is this the sign of the downfall of Nintendo? Is everything I love about Nintendo about to be, you know, sold off at auction here? And actually, I don't think so. And everything they've said sounds pretty reassuring. But there's a part of me that just wants to see the proof of that. And hopefully it's something that Nintendo fans will enjoy and not something that's just, you know, there to hopefully, you know, grab some easy bucks and make shareholders happy.
That's for sure. I think that does it for the news, though. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the future of Nintendo's big franchises.
Let's do it.
All right, we are back, and we are here to talk about the future of Nintendo's big franchises. And, you know, sort of the reason we're talking about this is because, you know, we've already had a couple of Mario games on Wii U. It seems that we're, you know, not getting a Metroid on Wii U. In all likelihood, the next time we see either of these franchises on console, it's going to be on NX. So I just thought we'd you know, sit down and talk about what we would like to see when it comes to these big name properties from Nintendo.
That's right, and also just kind of what makes sense, you know, just looking at where things lie right now. What, you know, what would be a logical next step for these franchises?
Mm-hmm. So what say you? What would you like to see Mario do? Should we continue on with, new Super Mario Brothers? Should, it be another Galaxy game? Should it be something totally different?
Well, I think I should preface everything by saying, of course, if anything that's quality from Mario or Metroid or any of these franchises, I'm going to be happy to get and I'm going to enjoy playing.
Oh, sure. We'll welcome any great
game.
Yeah,
so it's not necessarily properties. That it has to be this and nothing else. But I believe it would make sense. First of all, I think that we should be pretty much done with the new Super Mario Brothers style of side-scrolling Super Mario games for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have Mario Maker, or rather Super Mario Maker, coming out in about a month. And that's probably going to be all the 2D Mario we need for a long, long time, since it should give us an infinite supply of levels.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't imagine, well, maybe if years and years passed, but there had been so many new Super Mario Mario Brothers games back-to-back-to-back-to-back, that was starting to get a little... they're all good, but they were starting to get a little blah.
Mm-hmm. The newness was wearing off a bit.
Exactly, which is why it was a brilliant move for the next side-scrolling Mario game to be something like Mario Maker, which, mm-hmm. Totally freshened that up again. So obviously, I think we're looking at a 3D Mario game coming up next. And I think most people in general really liked Super Mario 3D World. I know a lot of people... Mm-hmm. Grumble about certain parts of it, and a lot of people think it's fine, but would much rather have had Galaxy 3.
I mean, I really, really loved 3D World, but I do think that Galaxy is far superior.
In any case, I believe that both Galaxy and, to an even stronger extent, 3D World had gotten to be very linear. They'd basically taken side-scrolling Mario and found a way to put it into 3D. As opposed to games like Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine, which felt more like you were in open environments and there was, you kind of start out in the middle of this area, and depending on which goal or which star you're trying to, reach, you could take off in different directions and explore the worlds in different ways. There was actually a lot more exploration in those types of games.
Probably fair to say. I mean, you go off the beaten path a lot in Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, there's branching paths, and even in some of the old games, there's always, hey, I didn't know if I rode this platform to the top, mm-hmm. then hopped on top of where the score would normally be, I could run backwards and find a door for an alternate exit in a game like Super Mario World. Mm-hmm. So there's always, exploration always plays a role in Mario, but obviously in those side-scrolling games, the more traditional Mario, it takes a backseat and primarily just action-based gameplay. Whereas when you're playing Mario 64, you could just sit there, totally not in danger of any enemies coming at you, and just take a long look around and figure out, plot your course. How do I get from here to there was a much bigger part, I think, of those games. So we haven't seen that in a while, and I think it'd be maybe a good time, just for variety's sake, to bring that style back, to have a Mario 64 or Mario Sunshine type environments to explore in the next Mario game.
Interesting.
Along those lines... just throwing this out there, I had kind of an idea. I think this has been batted around in various forms in a few places, but the idea of like maybe a city environment could be pretty cool. Super Mario City.
Yeah, I've thought of something along those lines as well. And, it really stems from how can they do open world with Mario play mechanics? And, I don't think I do a city, but, maybe... Super Mario Kingdom or something like that.
Yeah, I think it would, I don't picture like a Grand Theft Auto type city, but more of a Mushroom Kingdom style city, just like they did a kind of Mario approach to a, tropical getaway with Delfino Island in Mario Sunshine. If you could, but the idea of a city is you would have a lot of gameplay space maybe compacted in. You'd have a lot of verticality for platforming. Some levels could be set on top of skyscrapers. You could go into a park for some, down into the sewers for others. Maybe even you're riding a go-kart through the city streets, although I wouldn't want it to be like a kiddie Grand Theft Auto by any means. But the idea that you could have different kind of city blocks chunked up into different levels and, different worlds, maybe there's something there. Not to get too far into my own little Mario game development fan fiction here, but it does reinforce the idea that I think, as long as, platforming is king, I like the idea of and give me more kind of advanced moves. I love being able to use the kickflip and the long jump in ways that sometimes kind of sequence break certain Mario levels. Hmm. So I'd like to have some more advanced moves like that to play with in the biggest playground you can think of, where there is also that kind of element of what if I really want to go in a different direction? You know, how can I get from here to there? And it seems like something would be there, and I want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a little bit more exploration-heavy Mario isn't necessarily better than the other kinds, but we just haven't seen that in a while. So maybe it's time to bring that back, hopefully as a launch title for the NX, because mm-hmm. You know, if the same team that worked on 3D World has been working on a new Mario game, that's been quite a while that they've been working on it. So they could theoretically have a game ready for the launch of the NX.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be against something like that. I do really like the play mechanics of the Galaxy games, though, and I would like to see that sort of smoothness and responsiveness, and you know, probably even the actual spin maneuver stick around. I mean, I really, really like Galaxy 1 and 2, but I think I'm not ready for something that's actually called Galaxy 3. I'd rather see them try to do something that's slightly different, but retain that core gameplay because it's just so darn good.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to launch. I mean, the Galaxy games are two of my favorite Mario games, which means they're by default two of my favorite games ever. But you certainly wouldn't want to launch a brand new system on with like anything with a 3 in the title.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they were to somehow incorporate the NX's, you know, whatever its kind of system defining features are, or gimmicks, whatever you want to call that, it still wouldn't feel fresh enough. So I feel like, you know, new system. You ideally want a launch game, especially, or even within the first year. You want games, big flagship games that are really going to sell what this is. I mean, that's, you know, what everybody says Nintendo failed to do with the gamepad and the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
It's only recently that we've started to get, and even now, it's not like we're getting a huge flow of these kinds of games, but we're starting to get titles that kind of show the promise of the gamepad.
I don't know. I mean, we had Nintendo Land to begin with. I think it did show the promise of the gamepad, and no one cared. But I don't want to get off course here, so.
I like Nintendo Land.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you definitely want to put your best foot forward with, a huge new Mario game for a huge new system. So that's why even if they wanted to do something that was very, very close to Galaxy, I feel like maybe call it, you know, Super Mario Universe or something. Something that says this is still, as much as it might be based off of something that you already love, it's also its own thing.
Sure. Just in the way that, you know, Mario World was the introduction on the Super NES.
Exactly. Right.
So, yeah, I would definitely be down with that.
Now, I don't have to ask you what you would like to see in the next Metroid game because all your dreams are coming true with Federation Force.
That is so wrong.
But I'll try not to bash that game too much because, as we've said before, that game could end up being great. The developer is certainly one we like. But it's safe to say it's not what most Metroid fans would pick for the kind of game they want their Metroid to be.
Yeah, that is pretty safe to say. I mean, I've sort of talked about this already. When we were doing our hopes for E3, we talked about, you know, how we wanted to see a new Metroid game and the kinds of things we wanted out of that. And that really hasn't changed over the last few months. I mean, for me, personally, I do think they should go back to Metroid Prime because that was really where that was kind of the high point of the series for a lot of people. It really, you know, got people involved with the property, and it was a big hit for Nintendo, and people do love those first-person shooters. So I feel like that would probably be the best way to go. Maybe not with a 4 on the title, and maybe not with the things that some of the Nintendo guys have been talking about, where it's a continuation of the story with 3 and the bounty hunter is going after Samus. What was that guy's name?
It's Mr. Tanabe, who is
actually by the name of the bounty hunter.
Oh,
well, that would be cool if in the game Mr. Tanabe is hunting down Samus. Somehow that seems like it would be poetically appropriate.
That would be so meta. Now that would be a new approach for the NX. But I know Mr. Tanabe is the producer at NCL, right? Who worked with Retro? I believe he kind of oversaw their work on the Prime games. And he's the one apparently that had forever really wanted to make a game that showed what the Federation and the Space Pirates were up to away from Samus, which led to Federation mm-hmm. Force.
Yes. And that is something that I think is a bad, bad idea. If they did a Prime 4, I don't really care what's going on with these Federation folks. You know, it's Samus and it's mystery and it's atmosphere and it's the unknown. And I like to keep the Federation as unknown as possible. I don't want to know about them at all.
One thing that Other M really taught me, and I had been a very strong proponent before then about how Nintendo really needed to step up.
This is going
to
be about babies.
Well, yes, needed to step up its efforts in the baby department, but also in the story department. I always felt like, you know, as much as I enjoy the kind of the pure gameplay of Nintendo's franchises, occasionally you do want to really sink your teeth into a rich story. And, mm-hmm. and I thought Metroid was a great
Metroid seems like
opportunity for that.
It would be perfect.
But it just, and it's not that maybe it can't be, that can't work. But it just, they failed so much at it. Other M, mm-hmm. the story was terrible. And I still maintain that I think that game's better than its reputation.
Yeah, I think we could probably do an entire episode just based around that.
Yeah. I mean, if you strip away the couple of dumb, you know, the Where's Waldo segments and the weird over-the-shoulder third-person bits and the terrible story, mm-hmm. you're left with, you know, overwhelming amount of the gameplay being pretty good Metroid action, I think.
Yes, but I will stand by your score of that game.
It's so overshadowed, though, by the terrible parts. Mm-hmm. And
that's all everyone remembers is the bad stuff.
Yeah. And then also, you may not agree with me on this. I think I've said this before. But I also don't like the extra kind of bits of historical kind of story you get by scanning items in the Prime games. I felt compelled to scan all over the place just because I'm the type of player that wants 100% completion in mm-hmm. the games I play. But it was always just very dry, very scientific.
It became kind of a chore, too.
It was. The world.
It's not like, you know, hunting down, you know, extra missile tanks or something.
Yeah. I've never found the space pirates, and certainly not the Federation, to be interesting or to even have like a life.
Oh, come
to
on. How can a group of space pirates that involves a giant winged red monster, it's run by a robotic brain in a vat and has this giant 8-foot-tall green Godzilla monster, not interesting. Well, that's interesting, my friend.
It is interesting until you start dissecting it and overanalyzing it and trying to legitimize how all that exists and then getting all like, you know, here's the field guide to what these things are and what they eat. I don't care. I like
it. But no, you're totally right. I love it on when it's just this weird sort of nebulous thing. Like, why does this exist? How are these space pirates run by a robot brain monster?
And why are these strange bird aliens even called space pirates?
Right. So let's just not think about that. Just accept that it is and try not to delve too much into that lore, because once you do, it just kind of falls apart, I think.
And what you hit on, which was so important, and I really realized this after Other M, was how important atmosphere was to the earlier Metroid games.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of that weird alien sense of like aloneness in these strange worlds where you're the only kind of sentient creature, really. And, you know, you're exploring and you just see kind of these remnants of past civilizations and these hints at stories without ever explaining them. You know, I think the modern kind of masters of this, if they were actually putting games out in any kind of frequent regularity, would be Team Ico. Mm-hmm. I think when you play their games, you get that same kind of indescribable sense of feeling of something from the world, a presence. And a big part of that is their minimalist approach to storytelling and the actual details they give you. Metroid, I think, right now is the worst example. They just over-explain everything. It's just boring and not mysterious and not kind of cool anymore.
In fairness, they never explained who the deleter was.
Yeah.
That like the was the one critical plot point. The mystery through the whole game.
I told you that when I was playing that game to review it, I got to that point and I actually called up someone at Nintendo in the treehouse.
That's right.
Had to go through a few people to get there. And I was like, yeah, so who's the deleter? And he just kind of laughed and said, yeah, I figured people would be asking about that. So, yeah, even internally they knew what was up with that misstep. But, yeah, I would say, back to the kind of original thing you were talking about.
Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to throw you off course.
I go off course easily. But you would bring the Prime series back. I'm worried about that. I think, obviously, the Prime games were great, and they have a huge fan base. So I'm not saying that isn't the right decision, but I think there are some dangers there. I think that as much as I enjoyed what motion controls and brought to Prime 3,
mm-hmm.
I felt like that game, the Prime series was really starting to feel stale to me by Prime 3. Like, just like, I've just, you know, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze was an amazing game, but I beat Donkey Kong Country Returns and then Tropical Freeze, and now I feel like I really don't need a third one for quite a while.
Mm.
So, you know, even though there's been technically more side-scrolling Metroid games, it's been so long since we had one. That's what I'd like to see a return to. I mean, definitely for me personally, that's what I want. And I even think you could legitimize it for the broader base if they looked at it like, you know, when they looked at the Mario series and said, we haven't done a side-scrolling game in a while. Let's bring it back. We'll freshen it up. It'll be universally appealing, even though technically some people might consider side-scrollers outdated. And they created the new Super Mario Brothers series.
But still became, you know, way more popular than the 3D Mario.
Right. So, you know, I don't think and we also see, especially with indie development and some other stuff, that the more retro-y type games can't be great. And can't
retro-y
be...
type games?
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. But
see what you did there.
I think you can bring back a side-scrolling Metroid in a way that will perhaps even be more broadly appealing than a first-person shooter. You can freshen it up, give it some new gameplay mechanics. I really like, we've talked about this on the show before, what they did with Zeo Drifter, a very Metroid-inspired game, and how they had all these new mechanics like 3D effect of going into the background and out of the background, playing in two parallel.
So you mean really old school, doing, you know, pure 2D, huh?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it can be 2.5D. Maybe you can swing the camera around. But
well, Other M was 2.5D.
But basically, a side scroller. And yeah, and like I said, I didn't think Other M got everything wrong. I think there's a lot there that was good. It's just that so much of the crap stuff got in the way of really being able to enjoy it. So yeah, I wouldn't say let's think Other M was spot on. Do that again. But I would say I'd love to see a side scrolling Metroid game done right.
Yeah, I mean. While I do feel like the way to go would be a first-person Prime 4 on console, and you know, if they still have a dedicated handheld system, then to probably do something that's 2D or 2.5D on that. I mean, for me personally, when it comes to Metroid, yeah, I totally prefer the side-scrolling stuff, whether it's 2D or 2.5D, and that would be, you know, super far up my alley. I would totally get behind that.
And I'd like to see more emphasis put on Samus as a character. And by that, I don't mean that she gets more dialogue, because that clearly didn't work out with Other M.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in those earlier games, Super Metroid especially, I really kind of felt a close association with that character, because it was really just us and this whole planet of things trying to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
That even when we weren't actively being attacked, there was this kind of, moody kind of eerie loneliness that kind of made me bond with that character. So, you know, I'd love to see something that puts the focus back on her rather than the more bland kind of blah elements that I don't care about, such as everything that's being featured in the actual next Metroid game, Federation Force.
Yeah, we definitely don't need to see any more, you know, enemy bounty hunters or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the wrong direction to go.
And one last thought, people have dreamed about this since the original Metroid. We've always heard that Samus is a bounty hunter, but we've never really seen her being a bounty hunter in a way that's very bounty hunterish. I would love to have a game where perhaps you could get and accept bounties, then maybe even fly that ship to different planets where you have different kind of Metroid maze worlds to explore. And you know, maybe certain bounties are part of a main story and other ones are side kind of missions or something.
I could see integrated as side missions.
But, you know, being able to kind of, again, live
and
as...
take out, you know, certain mini-bosses or something, and it's like, oh, hey, you completed a bounty. Here's some sort of new power-up as a reward. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and it could also let you kind of personally dial in how much backtracking you want. You know, you could revisit certain areas multiple times to complete some of these side bounties.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you'll have to go through them a few times if you just want to stick to the story. So,
you know, kill off 70 giant mutant rats and get another power up.
Yeah, but I guess that's what I mean about how I'd like to focus more on Samus is just because I think
that'd be a fun way to evolve it.
Yeah, the premise of her character of being a freaking space bounty hunter, flying a spaceship around and taking in bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds awesome. And it's the series has never really quite lived up to that.
I suppose that's true.
Now, beyond those two, what other franchises, maybe they've been, you know, haven't been around for a while, but maybe they have been. Where would we like to see them go next?
Well, one that comes to mind for me is Kirby. And I'm kind of surprised that we haven't, you know, gotten any new Kirby game this year since Rainbow Curse. But I was expecting maybe we'd have some more announcements at E3 or something like that, but we didn't. So again, this might be something that we next see on NX. And the thing I would like to see them do with that is actually incorporate some elements of Metroid. And by that, I mean giving Kirby powers that he could, you know, acquire and then permanently use to upgrade himself. Because that's one of the things that's always been a little weird to me about the series, is you have all these different cool powers you can get, but ultimately it doesn't really matter if you have them or not. I mean, you know, for your personal preference, maybe You know, you can get a weapon, just say, oh, I just like this weapon. Or maybe it makes, you know, a certain small segment easier. But I like to be able to get, you know, permanent powers that you can acquire that would help navigate the levels or, you know, get through certain obstacles or something like that.
Mega Man style. You mean where you kind of collect these powers and then can pull out the ones that are appropriate for certain situations?
Yeah, exactly. But I was thinking more, you know, the nonlinear Metroid type of mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Metroid style as far as power accumulation. I mean, sorry, Mega Man style. Yeah.
So, yeah, some of them would just be, you know, straight up weapons that you could use. You're like, oh, I definitely want to use this kind of weapon on this kind of enemy or this kind of boss because it's, you know, the most effective technique. But some of them would just be, you know, navigation. Oh, I have to use this, you know, special sword to smash through this kind of wall so I can get through this area. And they have done, I think, Metroid style navigation in the past. But it's not something that they turn to very often, and so I'd like to see them, you know, do that in a full-blown big console release.
That's one of the things that used to really throw me, and what kept me from enjoying Kirby games for a while is I really overthought them.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I would, most games, if there were abilities you could gain during a level, then that level would be built around those abilities. Mm-hmm. And you'd be expected to be planning ahead and thinking carefully about which abilities you chose.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, like you said, it really didn't matter. I would grab one power, and then two screens over, I'd grab another power. But I'd be like, wait, should I let that other power go? And I'd just be worrying and stressing myself needlessly through the whole level until the end when you realize it really doesn't matter.
But I'd like it to matter. And so that's kind of the thing that I'm thinking I would like to see them do with Kirby.
Obviously, if you're not overthinking it like I was, and maybe you were, you can just enjoy the game for what it is. It's not like what's there is broken or anything. But I do agree with you. I think that would lend an extra little something to that franchise.
Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been that long since we got a new Donkey Kong game with Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. But, what else could they do with this big honkin' ape they got?
Well, you know, I've been playing over the last weekend. I played a lot of the old Game Boy Advance game, Mario versus Donkey Kong, which was actually a sequel to Donkey Kong, which was just called Donkey Kong for Game Boy. It came out in 94.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about that on the Game Boy episode.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it. I went back and played both of those a lot this past weekend, and especially with the original Game Boy Donkey Kong, really was just blown away by how well it holds up. And how much it is at once a total celebration of the original arcade Donkey Kong, but also something that is much more complex and fresh and new, and with all the different elements they add to these puzzle-like levels. It's a real puzzle action hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really love to see them do something else with that again. I mean, after Mario versus Donkey Kong on GBA, that series evolved, as we said before, into the minis, the March of the Minis type games, which is...
Yes, those very popular characters from Despicable Me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which...
Oh, no, those are the Minions. My bad.
And those games really clicked with me, so I'd like to see something that's much more in the spirit of what Donkey Kong really was originally. And not that I wouldn't love to see another Donkey Kong Country game, but I've had enough of that for a while.
So what you really are saying is you hate gorillas and you want to see Mario make them plummet to their doom.
Yeah, that's always fun when he cracks his skull in front of his little Donkey Kong Jr. I don't know, maybe mix it up and even have you being Donkey Kong going up against Mario.
So you're thinking this would be a full-blown console release?
Well, certainly I could see it as a handheld game, just like those two that I mentioned were.
Yeah, because when you say something like that, that seems to work as a, you know, very compact, portable type of experience, you know, these small chunks. But I'm trying to envision what it would be like on console, and I'm having trouble seeing it in my head.
With those games, you could also make really great level editors, and, you know,
put together
your own Donkey Kong levels, which would be great for something like the gamepad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they had a level editor in the second Mario versus Donkey Kong, which, again, was the minis thing. But, that would be great for, the regular Mario versus Donkey Kong series.
No matter what they do, I'd love...
Weren't they actually planning that at one point? I swear, I remember seeing something like that at E3 once.
I'm not sure.
Wow.
But no matter what,
it's
I'd love to see...
possible I'm crazy.
I'd love to see kind of that original Donkey Kong spirit return, where he's less of the kind of laughable class clown with the tie and the kewpie hair. But he's more of the, you know, slightly out of control, you know, gorilla who isn't a bad guy, but, you know, we'll grab your girlfriend and carry up to the top of a construction site.
Why do I feel like there's a Wreck-It Ralph scene coming on here?
Yeah. You know what? Maybe I was also thinking about Donkey Kong because of that Pixels movie.
Yeah.
Maybe the one good thing that came out of that movie was me remembering how awesome the original Donkey Kong games were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what I would do with Donkey Kong myself. I mean, he's they've done so many things with him. You know, platforming star, bongo player. Once I heard we would succeed by bongos. So maybe it's time to do another bongo adventure.
That was a great game, by the way. Which a lot of people still didn't know about, the not the Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, which was fine for what it was, a little music rhythm game, but the Donkey Kong...
Well, Jungle Beat was the platformer.
Oh, I'm Donkey thinking of Donkey Konga. Konga.
Yeah, Donkey Konga was the actual rhythm game.
Right. Jungle Beat does sound an awful lot like a rhythm game, though, doesn't it? But anyway,
but they both use bongos. They all use
so
bongos.
So Jungle Beat, even though you use bongos, and then there was the re-release for Wii, which used motion controls.
Yes.
That was an amazing game done by the team that went on to make the Galaxy games, the Mario Galaxy games. So that's a little gem if people haven't heard about that one. You need to go back and find it.
And again, you know, there was racing stuff. He's been in a lot of racing games as well. So
I guess that's one thing I feel about that character. For being the granddaddy of all Nintendo characters, he... Even more so than Mario, I feel like he doesn't have much of an identity. He's been spread thin in a lot of ways. And if you were to think of like what his the main representation of Donkey Kong is, it'd probably be the Donkey Kong Country games, and that's mm-hmm. fine. But I do feel like the original kind of arcade puzzle style Donkey Kong, should stick around.
So another back to its roots sorts of thing.
Yeah,
I can see that.
You never go wrong going back to something's roots as long as you do it through a fresh, lens.
Well, speaking of donkeys, yeah, actually, I don't have anything to say about donkeys. But I was actually kind of thinking that, aside from Nintendo properties that haven't been around for a while, it would be kind of cool to see some of these third-party properties show back up. I know this is kind of a long shot. It's something that, I don't expect to happen. But, while we're dreaming about this stuff, I was kind of thinking, what if, Capcom finally gets its act together and finally brings us, like, a new Mega Man?
Or if Nintendo finally bought Mega Man from them or something.
I still don't see how that's likely to happen.
That's my fantasy. But, don't ruin
I guess it's really not too much worse than imagining that Capcom's going to invest in a nice new Mega Man game on a Nintendo system.
Nintendo's going to buy Mega Man and Sonic, and everything's going to be better than ever.
But the thing I would like to – I mean, I have a couple ideas about what I'd like to see them do with Mega Man. I mean, the obvious one – would just be to make another traditional, side-scrolling action game. And, maybe I've had enough of the traditional 8-bit style. You know, Mega Man 7 and 8 were really beautiful games. I'd like to see them, up their game to, more detailed graphics like that. That would be a cool way to go. But, I also think it could be worthwhile to, bring Mega Man back as, a top-tier, 3D platform star. And, they did some 3D platforming with Legends, of course, and we all know what happened with that one. But, I'm thinking, maybe it would be cool to go sort of the Ratchet and Clank style. I mean, that's a game that I've always felt, and borrowed a lot from Mega Man, so there's such an emphasis on the weapons. Although in that game, it, kind of ends up, doesn't really matter a lot of times what weapon you get. Just grab all the weapons you can, make sure you don't run out of ammo, destroy everything in your path. But just the fluidity of movement and the environments and all the different weapons you can get, it seems like you could apply that sort of thing to the Mega Man formula. Make the weapons be more specialized, make it, a little more obvious that, yes, you want to use some sort of certain weapons against specific bosses or specific enemies or things like that. Again, I guess that's kind of the same thing I was talking about with Kirby. But, with Mega Man, I could see them being, full-blown, 3D action platformer would be a fun way to go if they wanted to get behind that character again in a major way.
That's actually really easy to picture. You say Mega Man, but kind of done like Ratchet & Clank, but more Mega Man-y. And I'm like, all right away, I'm right with you on that.
Yeah, seems like a easy way to go.
I'll just throw in really quick. I'd like to see, as far as the style of a game, Mega Man Legends was a little comical and cutesy with all the little, what are they called? Little bots?
Oh, the serve bots.
Yeah.
The minions.
But I feel like originally, just like with the best Mario games, even though they're cutesy, they're kind of taken a little more seriously, and it's a little bit more like action-adventure-y. So I feel like not dark by any stretch of the imagination, but I'd like to see Mega Man be a little bit more, aggressively kind of action-y and a little less, cartoony maybe.
I mean, I sort of see this as a continuation of the classic original Mega Man series.
Right.
I mean, if you like your stuff a little bit darker, then you have your X series. But I'd like to see, just this be not a reboot, but, sort of a continuation, a reimagining sort of classic Mega Man. You know, we're still getting, word from Roll and Dr. Light, and you'll still see Proto Man show up and stuff like that. Hey, maybe he'll carry a Rush around on his back. It can be. he'll turn into a little helicopter to help him hover across pits or something. No, I don't want that much Ratchet and Clank influence. But yeah, I could see all that stuff working out. While I'm, just making up, crazy random dream games that aren't going to happen, what would you like to see if, Konami gained a grain of sense and brought Castlevania back?
I would like to see... again, I guess my tastes skew a little bit retro. I'd like to see something more in line with Castlevania 3 and 4.
Hmm.
Something that is old school, that isn't necessarily a Metroidvania-style game, that is just old school, straightforward Castlevania action. Whip-cracking action.
Hmm. So, kind of like the Rebirth game that we got on WiiWare, huh?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game. I played through that one and really liked it.
Yep, that'd be cool. I could definitely see that.
I mean, I wouldn't say no to another Egovania-type game. I did back his Kickstarter project.
Hmm.
It's just like with anything. Like I said, with the Mario series, you get used to a certain style of game in a franchise for quite a number of iterations, and it's fun just to mix it up.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you would kind of like to see return? Looking, wait for that that new Duck Hunt or Urban Champion?
Oh, yeah, I did have my dream game that was like a mix of
Urban. Duck Hunt and Urban Champion.
Of Urban Champion and pro wrestling. But or it was Urban Champion in name only. It was this idea that you'd have this big kind of like a whole city is like taken over by this street-level fighting tournament. And you're basically, imagine lots of people playing online all at once, but they're, in little city blocks where it's only a few people fighting each other at once, and you're like doing pile drivers off the tops of burned out cop cars and slamming people's heads in car doors. And it's all really kind of cartoony and cheeky. And then maybe each little area boss is a character from pro wrestling or something. That's my nerd fantasy.
Well, I would like to see, pro wrestling, dug up. They can, find whatever happened to the Aki guys that made the old N64 wrestling games. If they did that, though, I think they would have to have Duck Hunt Dog as a hidden playable character.
Well, any game where you can beat the crap out of that dog is okay by me.
That would be the best.
Although he is kind of, I am warming up to him now that I get to play as him in Smash Bros.
Yeah, you say that now, but once you hit the taunt button and he starts laughing at you, then that rage will overcome you again.
By the way,
pal,
I forgot until this very moment, and maybe this will completely change your impression of Pixels, but Duck Hunt Dog is in that movie.
Great. Now they're ruining Duck Hunt Dog as well.
There's a part where a very accurate-looking Duck Hunt Dog pops up, is holding the duck, and does his laugh from the game. It's just a really quick cameo, and it's like I said, the graphics, the special effects, and the cameos are pretty well done in that movie.
You're way too big a fan of this movie.
even if he popped out of garbage, you'd be like, hey, Duck Hunt Dog.
He literally is popping out of garbage, my friend. Okay, well, enough of that. Enough, fantasy planning for Nintendo's games. I think that's kind of a show, but first, I think we're going to do a dramatic reading, this time featuring the back of the box of the Game Boy game, Boxel. Boxel is a game. Boxel is a puzzle. Boxel is the go-anywhere brain teaser for the Game Boy system that you just can't put down. The game is based on moving crates around in a warehouse. But manual labor won't win the game. It takes brain power to move boxes into their proper spaces, to clean up the room and get to the next screen. And the next. And the next. The puzzles keep coming. Over 100 different screens in all. It boxels the mind. Plus, you can pick your puzzle or use the edit function to create your own screens. You'll never get bored once you get Boxel. 108 screens, 3 edit screens, password memory, animation and synthesized sound. Unlike all those other old Game Boy games that didn't bother with the animation or sound.
Okay, well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff also has a really cool blog called Still Playing With Power, which you can find at christhehoff.tumblr.com, and you can email us for any reason at powerprospod@gmail.com. And as always, thank you so much for leaving us those kind ratings on iTunes. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And the Prince of Darkness, Ganon. We will see you next time.
Wild Stallion!